This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
In your town, your suburb. From Casterton to Mallacoota.
From Mildura to Wilson's Prom.
This is where the conversation begins.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria. This is the Conversation Hour.
So, given all the building and construction that's happening across Victoria at the moment, you'd be forgiven for thinking that there are more than enough tradies. But new research has shown that many of us simply aren't interested in becoming a tradesperson. Data released just last week from the National Centre for Vocation, Education and Research showed that the number of people starting a construction apprenticeship has fallen by 22%. And if that data isn't enough, the number of portaloos being hired has dropped by a third. So what's happened? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning, Bronwyn O'Shea, joining you from ABC Wodonga. Bron, I didn't know there was a Portaloo Index, but I think there is.
Those stats don't lie.
I wonder what's going on. Yeah.
I wonder why. Is it that employers just aren't in a position to take on apprentices anymore? Maybe the time isn't there, that investment you have to make. Maybe they need better incentives, and that's been talked about a lot. What would that look like? Or are people just not keen on being a tradie anymore? Has the gloss really gone off it, and young people now looking at a career think, well, you know, why would I crawl around in a tight space on a hot day? Why would I do messy, dirty work and start at the bottom of the heap? Maybe there is something different that I want from the beginning of my working life.
And when we talk about taking on an apprenticeship, there's probably only small pockets in your life when you can financially do that.
Yeah.
So you would probably need to be either young and living at home or have someone else in your life who can financially support you while you take on an apprenticeship. So I feel like the pool of who can put their hand up and say, yep, I will train in this area is getting smaller and smaller. The pay we know for apprenticeships is really, really low. And I also think, Bron, you're right. You've touched on something there. There's been a shift, you know, without getting into the generational debate, there's been a shift around work-life balance and what constitutes a happy and healthy working environment and life. And I wonder whether people are reconsidering what it means to take on a trade. But then there's the flow-on effects for all of us. If we don't have enough tradespeople, we're all, you know, there was a huge hold-up during the pandemic, building, construction, and not even necessarily big scale. What if you just need something fixed around your
and
house?
Getting your hands on a tradie is hard, you know, and you want to hold on to the good ones, don't you, with dear life. But if you end up working in an industry like that where people are so desperate and cranky because they've had to wait for a long time, surely that also plays a part. If you're constantly turning up and people are frustrated and have waited a long time, that's not a nice environment to be working in either. So I wonder, where do the solutions lie?
Well, Jack in Sunshine already says young people are not interested in trades. That is a fact. So do you work in a trade? What's the reality for you at the moment? If you're an employer, are you struggling to keep or to find an apprenticeship? Are you considering taking up a trade apprenticeship? And if you're not, then why not? Bron, there's this text and it said, I wanted to be an electrician. I did the certificate too under a free trade, but I found the pay cut and the treatment of me as a woman and the general lack of support of where to go next after the pre-apprenticeship for was just a complete turn off. That was in 2021. I haven't gone near a power tool since.
Wow.
We didn't even touch on the gender issue in our introduction.
Yeah, and I think what is interesting about that text is it's supporting the stats we know that are that a whole lot of people that start trades don't finish. I think only one in two actually complete their apprenticeship. So not only are we having trouble attracting people, we can't keep them in an apprenticeship either.
Rachel says, just look at the job ads. They want experienced workers and they're not willing to train. We have heard for decades now, whether you've got either yourself or someone close to you that's been in an apprenticeship position and been at the bottom of the ladder, so to speak, if you don't mind the pun there, in a trade apprenticeship, that you get treated really poorly, you know, that it's kind of your rite of passage to have to deal with aggressive behaviour or to be just seen as the person that has to pick up everybody else's, you know,
rubbish.
Rubbish.
Yeah. It's sad, isn't it? Because I also know some wonderful stories of people who have gone into apprenticeships and those relationships have been amazing and lifelong friendships and relationships formed between, you know, who was the apprentice and the owner of that business. So, you know, there are good environments out there, but not all of them are.
You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. This is The Conversation Hour. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Bronwyn O'Shea is joining you from ABC Wodonga. As we try and kind of figure out why trade apprenticeship numbers are dropped by 22%. Gary Workman is the Executive Director of Apprenticeship Employment Network. Gary, there's almost a full board of calls and the texts are flowing in. Here's just one of them. It says, I'd be more than happy to do a trade apprenticeship, but at 50 years of age, I can't afford to toss in a $90,000 a year job for a $45,000 a year apprenticeship. Does it just come down to money?
Good morning, Rochelle and Bronwyn. Yeah, look, I think you've picked up a lot of the challenges already this morning. Pay is certainly one of them. The system we have designed here in Australia was really designed 50 years ago for young people when they were 15, 16, 17, leaving school early, still predominantly probably working or living at home and working so they could afford to do that. What we find today is the average age of a male apprentice is about 21, 22, and the average age of a female apprentice is a lot higher, probably around 27, 28. So cost of living, all those issues that you've raised are certainly some problems, and the government are doing a few little things there to support people, but for some people it's probably not enough.
Can we afford to pay apprentices more though? I mean, if you look at any industry, when you're entry level, you're going to earn less than you are, when you've got decades of experience. Can we afford to pay apprentices a bit more?
Yeah, look, there's always that fine balance. People need to remember that it's you're working on and off the job, so you need the supervisor in your workplace. You need to make sure that you're safe. You're going to have someone who's skilled supporting you and teaching you as you go through your four-year apprenticeship. So as your productivity improves over the first year, second year and so on, the wages improve as they go along. And a lot of employers, when they find a good apprentice and they've got good skills and they're productive, are more than happy to pay above award rates to keep them when they finish their apprenticeship. So there's always that trade-off early. And if you compare it to a university or someone else, you might be, you know, might have to support yourself through part-time work to.
Well, there's a text here that says it's got to be better than a huge hex debt.
That's right. So you do have those benefits. The Australian government also does have a support loan system, so you can actually take out a loan. It's very similar to a HECS system and you've got to pay it back later on, but you get a 20% discount if you successfully complete. So there are ways to get additional funds to help you through your apprenticeship in the early years.
Gary, I know that obviously that relationship, whoever it is that's mentoring or supervising you as an apprentice, that relationship is really important. Mm. And I feel as though if you've got the wrong person, things could go pear-shaped pretty quickly. And we do know that nearly one in two people leave an apprenticeship. They don't ever complete it. If you just incentivise through money, if you say to employers, here's a bucket of money to employ an apprentice, I'm aware you wouldn't necessarily get the right person motivated for that reason, yeah, to take care of that apprentice. So what's being done across the industry to make sure that we have the right people caring for and developing those apprentices on site?
Yeah, you're spot on. And this is one of the reasons why we've had a 22% decrease in the last quarter. So through COVID, there was a $28,000 incentive for employers to take on more apprentices through, you know, some tough economic times. And we did see an increase in the number of employers doing that, but not all of them did it for the right reasons. And, you know, completion rates, as you mentioned before, are only sitting at around 50%. So we really need employers out there to lift their game. There's some really good organisations out there that are not-for-profits or industry-based organisations that can help you through that. They can rotate you to other employers if the match isn't a great fit for the first placement that you have, or if there's a lack of work, or you know, there's some, you need a change in the type of work that you're doing so you get a well-rounded, skilled worker at the end. There's organisations out there called group training that can help you with those. Our members employ about 6,000 apprentices across the state. So they're ways that can help you get better employment outcomes and better completion rates.
You're listening to Gary Workman. He's the Executive Director of Apprenticeship Employment Network. This is the Conversation Hour. So many texts on this, Gary. Here's just a couple. It didn't take long for the tech college and to bring back tech schools line to come through. It says, Chris here, they need to bring back tech schools. Current education system is just failing those young people who want to do trades. Not everyone can be an academic. Kids now are diagnosed with everything from ADHD due to poor concentration and behaviour and problematic issues at school. These young people were once interested in trades and were able to go to a tech school as opposed to university. Bring back that option of trade and trade incentives. But another saying, young people can't stay committed for 4 years. They cost money to train, and when they're good enough to make some money, they just leave you and there's no return for that and for the employers. That's from Dan, who's a mechanic. Let's bring Steve into this. G'day, Steve.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good. What's your experience?
Oh, look, I'm in the painting industry, and I've put 13 kids through their apprenticeship over my journey. And the reality is, if you don't have support at home, then you can't do an apprenticeship. And the other thing is, too, even with that tool, like it's like a hex debt, but the incentive should be on the employer, where when they finish their time, then they get the tax break. Instead of that way, that would be, yeah, it almost forces them to keep their kid till the end. Or a young person to the end, and then when they finish their time, then they're going to be rewarded once that time is completed. So there's a few things. Also, the driver's license should be dropped to 17, and the minimum wage is what, 22, 23? You start off on $13 an hour, so I don't quite understand how that works. So there's a lot of things, and also there's always going to be crap employers, so that's just a fact of life. But it's just, and the aging. The trades that are putting on people are getting older. We're all baby boomers or Gen X. So there's a few things working against it.
What, you've put 13 kids through apprenticeships, you said, Steve.
Yes.
What's been the secret, do you think, to getting them all the way through and happy at the end, both of you happy at the end?
Well, a little bit. My work was always, it's been top end. It's been middle to top end work, so it's not entry project homes. It's been, we're down the coast. So it's all been really good work. And it's just trying to create a good environment. There's been a couple of girls through there as well in that period as well. So it's just about creating a good environment. And the bottom line is, the sooner they get to know how to do everything, the more money they're going to make for me. So you teach them as much as you can, as quick as you can. So then they feel good. And they're going to leave. Like, they're not going to stay forever. They're going to, some will stay for a couple of years after their apprenticeship, some will go. But then when they go out on their own, then I've fed them out work as a subcontractor over that period of time until they get established on their feet. So it's not, you still keep the relationship going because you can help each other out down the track.
It also seems to make sense when you put it like that. I just wonder why the numbers aren't adding up. Just finally, Gary Workman, what are the solutions? I mean, there are plenty of techs are coming in saying, well, we just see the solution now as being overseas skilled and unskilled migration. We can just get workers who want to do the work. So many people saying, you know, Aussie kids just don't want to get their hands dirty or work hard anymore. They want to start at the top and they don't want to work their way up. And then you've got people comparing it to doing a nursing degree and you don't get paid to do that. So why should the trade industry be any different? What's the next step? I mean, we need tradespeople. The retention numbers aren't great. What needs to be done?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we can do. I think you've touched on a few of them there. So certainly we need to do more in the secondary school system. The Victorian government have just started the first year of their vocational major program. We also have a secondary school-based apprenticeship system that more schools need to get involved with, and young people all learn at different rates and different speeds, and they've all got different passions. So I think we've got to give young people more of an opportunity to explore what they're good at an earlier age while they're in secondary school, and then treat pathways to university and to apprenticeships as equal. Like, why is one better than the other? And, you know, all those sorts of things in the community. We're certainly going to need more tradies going forward. And the answer is not bringing in skilled migrants. The more we offshore this work, the more that we bring in outside skilled migration, the less opportunities we're going to provide for our young people here. So youth unemployment's already double what the unemployment rate is. We certainly need more employers like Steve out there to give young people an opportunity. And we've got to be patient. We know that there's expectations for young people and parents and also for our employers. We've got to come together to make sure that we're supporting our young people better.
Does it come down to, I mean, we've kind of been talking about boys and guys a lot already this morning. Is there still just a huge gender divide? And there's 50% of the population out there that could potentially throw their hand up. But the very first text we got the moment we started talking about this was from a woman who said, it just wasn't the environment for me. Do we need to do a lot of work in that space? And is that a part of this?
We do, yeah. There's a, again, the government have got some priority cohorts, whether, you know, First Nations people, culturally diverse, young women. They're all opportunities where we can create more employment for and more opportunities in trades where there traditionally haven't been that many. We also need employers to step up on this and make sure that they've got culturally safe environments. They've got opportunities for young people with diverse backgrounds to, you know, be mentored appropriately, making sure that they've got also some peer support. There's no use putting one young woman on a construction site by herself. That's never going to work. So, you know, we need to be a little bit smarter about how we can support some of these people getting into something that hopefully they're passionate about and they can forge a career.
Great to hear from you. Thanks for joining our chat, Gary. Gary Workman, who's the Executive Director of Apprenticeship Employment Network.
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning. Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Bronwyn O'Shea joining you from ABC Wodonga. As we talk about, well, the huge number of people just not finishing their trade apprenticeship, there's been a 22% drop in people throwing up their hand and saying, I want to work in a trade. So why is that? There's a text here, Bron, from Alistair, and it says, I'm a 59-year-old fitter and turner. I've had a brilliant career after my apprenticeship in Ballarat. I travelled the world working on high-tech equipment based in Bangkok. I've returned to find that the system is broken.
Wow, how disappointing. Let's hear from Jacob. He's a boilermaker in Geelong.
What do you think would work? What would keep people interested in staying and going the distance in an apprenticeship, in a trade apprenticeship?
There's a few things. I think it's definitely like the length of it makes it like it's a long commitment. 4 years for someone nowadays is, yeah, like you don't know where you'll be in a month or 2 years or whatever in your life. So I think that's very hard, is the commitment. Probably the money-wise as well, maybe some incentives, training, more training. I'm not sure. Yeah.
People have been asking about mentorship. Like it's very, you know, well and good to say, well, the employer and you've got great mentorship, but what does good mentorship look like to you?
Well, I think like good mentorship, yeah, like I was lucky enough being like 30 years old when I started my apprenticeship that I wasn't fresh. So I had a bit more common sense with me and stuff. And yeah, guys were willing to teach me stuff because they knew that, all right, he's going to pay attention. He's going to listen. Unfortunately, I did have a few apprentices in the same company that I worked for that weren't the same. They're only there because their dad was there or something like that, or someone they knew was there. Yeah. So I found that, because I'd had 10 years and I'd done some travelling and I'd done some other jobs that, this is what I wanted to do, this is why I'm here, and I just want to get it done. So
that's interesting, yeah. Isn't it? I wonder if attracting, you know, people with life experience and who've already worked for a while, I mean, there are obviously challenges, as we've heard from other texts, to going backwards in terms of pay to start an apprenticeship, but having that good head on your shoulders is a really good attribute to be able to bring. Jacob, now that you are a boilermaker and you finished your apprenticeship, will you consider taking on an apprentice in the future?
Unfortunately, I work in construction and these days it's very rare to see an apprentice like as a boilermaker or a rigger or anything like the field that I work in, to see them actually on construction sites. I know that's probably had a lot to do with some workplace laws and stuff like that have gone back, because I knew they used to have mandates for a certain amount of employees, used to have a certain amount of requirement, a certain amount of apprentices they had to employ. But I think a lot of that's gone now. And I'm really happy to teach someone or show someone I think business probably all comes down to money these days and timelines. And they just want things done quicker and cheaper like everyone does these days. And unfortunately, that's one of the consequences, is that you lose people along the way.
Yeah, the timeline's really important. Jacob, really good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Christine says on text, I get so frustrated listening to this. I used to sign up 80 apprentices a month. The job that I did was slashed by the government 7 years ago. We need the role I did reintroduced. The employer and future apprenticeships need help knowing where and how to go about this. Kerry's been waiting really patiently. She's in Ballarat. G'day, Kerry.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what did you want to say?
There seems to be a flaw in the education system, in the TAFE system, I believe, in that kids who are going through secondary school, my father, my husband, my brother all went through the old tech school system where they knew that they wanted to be a tradie. So they went through that system and they actually learnt how to use equipment, whereas now it's too much OH&S, so you can't learn to weld or all of these types of things because you do this Mickey Mouse type work. But overnight, often TAFEs often have after school where they actually can go, kids can actually go and do a, you know, have experience and do trade courses after school, which I think really needs to be encouraged. But the flaw in the system, the funding, is that my son and my nephew, they're both academic. They did higher level maths and English and everything. Not, they didn't do any VCAL subjects because they were keen on really extending themselves. But the problem was then, because they didn't do VCAL subjects, when they were doing night school, it cost us $700 for a unit, which we were fortunate enough to be able to pay for, but that was one unit. So it would cost $8,000 if they wanted to do night school to learn. And so they were learning welding, which my nephew we've ultimately employed. He's a great kid. But my son wanted to go off and do university, but he thought he could learn some trade skills, which would then help with his university degree when he eventually does it. But they need to really... So I can't see why a kid who's doing VCAL versus a kid who's doing mainstream subjects, why they can't reduce the fee and not have a fee, because then a lot of the kids who are uncertain what they want to do could be encouraged to do night school when they're just playing on computer games instead, but try trades of a night.
Slight generalisation, but yes.
Sorry, well, that's what my son was doing, but they were actually learning a skill that, and other kids might try that skill and think, okay, I might like welding, but I might like to be a plumber or a carpenter.
Yeah, I agree, Kerry. And also that idea of it shouldn't be a privilege. You know, you shouldn't have to rely on the finances behind it if this is a job that you want to get into, and if you have the passion to start it, then money shouldn't hold you back.
Yeah, and that idea of giving people options and not putting young people into boxes and saying, well, you're academic, you're doing the high level of this, so that's your pathway, that doesn't necessarily get the best result for anyone. Mark Fidge is the CEO of Southwest TAFE, so perfect time to introduce you into the chat, Mark. Welcome.
Good morning.
You would have heard what Kerry said there about what she sees as a flaw in the TAFE system. What do you see around that issue of the cost of doing, say, an extra bit of learning in the evening that might expose you to those trades?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to comment on that particular scenario, I suppose, or case, but the option of actually having night school as an option is, I think, a really good one. I don't think it should be prohibitive in regards to the costs. I think the cost should be fair and reasonable for anybody that's interested in this. We know that we do a lot of, well, with us, we do a lot of work with the schools right from the outset. So I actually mentioned about the schools. And whether that's through a vetting schools program or a pre-apprenticeship, even trade tasters, to get kids interested at an early age and then support them through with some funding support as well to keep that interest up, to go into their apprenticeships. And I think that works really quite well for us. Whether that means there's a need for a night school, our numbers have been really positive in the last few years. And in fact, we've seen an increase in apprenticeship numbers over the last few years. So
maybe that's because you're out there talking to the schools.
Well, I think that's a large part of it. I think it's a really important part. We've got a really good engagement with the schools in our region. You know, and to have 9% growth in the last 12 months and then 9% again this year in apprenticeship numbers is fantastic. And that's particularly in plumbing and building and across some of the others as well. But I think the work that we put in regards to our engagement with schools and employers and industry is key to the success and the continued growth of apprenticeship numbers across our region.
Mark, when you go into schools, how do you get kids excited about the prospect of working in construction or in a trade?
Yeah, well, I think one of the first things is having the conversation with the principals and the career advisors about that it's a realistic option. You know, there's too many conversations about having to go to university or, you know, and I think that's a realistic option, but it's much broader than that. And we know in our region that apprentices and trades are a large part of what we do. And so starting at that early age in regards to having the conversation with the schools is important. But then offering what we do here is a trade taster, for example, and it's on a Friday and a Monday. It was about a month ago, and we had 800 students come along to one of our trade locations, and they got to experience about 15 different types of trades. It was only for about 15 minutes each. But what it did to them is it opened their eyes up and options, I suppose, for when they want to leave school, or in fact, even doing it as part of their schooling.
Mm.
And I think that's giving them that option and that, and then talking to them about their career options and what this actually looks like for them long term as well.
And what defines a trade too? It's very easy to make that quite narrow. There's so many texts on this, Mark, both positive and negative, but here's one of the positive. We've had many of those too, and it's from Craig, and it says, "G'day guys, I'm a Sparky, I'm 50. The industry has been great to me. Great flexibility, I've travelled the world. I now live in a small coastal town. I can be there when the kids get home from school. I took yesterday off because the surf was good. I'm still fit and healthy. I'm never bored. You can just crank it up or slow it down depending on where I am in life. I'm encouraging my kids to do it." But then at the same time, Mark, there's a heap of texts coming in saying, "Look, my son was just exploited and left after 6 months. He was bullied, that the workplace culture still has a lot of work to do." What's your sort of snapshot of the industry at the moment? How healthy is it?
Mm. Yeah, and look, I can only speak in regards to what I think is happening here locally. And I think it is a bit different to the metropolitan areas. And the reason why I say it is because we as an organisation are connected with the employers and the students, etc. You can walk down the street on a Saturday and a Sunday and you'll have parents or relations of someone saying, we're having a great experience with your organisation. Or in fact, I'll say, we're not having a great experience with your organisation. So you hear this constantly. But I think the support mechanisms you put in around these apprentices is key. And, you know, in a local sense, in a regional area, if you're an employer that's actually not looking after your staff, you get known pretty quick.
Yeah, so you get a bump into them at the supermarket.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know? So I think that's a large part of the success in regional areas for the retention of students or apprentices to go on and do their completion. You know, it's nothing for my staff here, the teachers, to ring a parent and say, little Jimmy's mucking up a bit and, you know, can we pull him back into line? Because they know the parents or they know the employer really well. And I think that's a large part of it. That's the key to the success.
Mark, stay with us. Let's head to Queenscliff, where Peter has given us a call. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to say?
Look, I'm an employer in the automotive industry, and we've had many apprentices through, and in fact, one's even now got a share in our business. But going through that, the biggest problem we had, and Mark is quite right, it's the school. For too long, people have been encouraged to go into tertiary education, and often it was square pegs in round holes, and they weren't necessarily suited to it. So I dare say the number of people not finishing tertiary degrees is probably one in two as well.
And that's such a big conversation, Peter, how many schools have got career advisors now and dedicated career advisors? And, Mark, I don't know how long you've kind of worked in this space, but you would see trends kind of come and go. I know in my lifetime I've seen the push to trades or the push to university. It's almost like that seven-year cycle of what's in vogue, of what you should be pushing young people towards. Where are we at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And I think it's currently shifting towards the schools broadening the thinking of students that are going through. They're having the conversations about, you know, I know 6 or 7 years ago firsthand with my own experience as a parent, where I sat there in a careers night and it was all about university. 6 years later, and I've not had any influence over this in my role as a result of this, but it's now talking about university, it's talking about TAFE, it's talking about a job. And I think that's a really positive conversation to have with students, because the pressure that is experienced by students going through school is enough as it is. If it's all about university, I think it's too narrow. And so I think that's shifting, and I think it's dependent on the career advisors and also the principals at the schools to want to open that conversation.
You're on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria. Rochelle Hunt and Bronwyn O'Shea with you. Mark Fidge is the voice that you're listening to. He's the CEO of Southwest TAFE. As we're looking at apprenticeship numbers, why are they dropping when it comes to apprenticeship trades? And what would make you or someone in your life throw their hand up and take on a trade apprenticeship? Mark, you're saying that numbers are good. What about the gender numbers here? Are you seeing more women, younger or older women, coming in and wanting to learn a trade?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that question because we've got a really positive story here. Just recently we had a mentor in the electrical field, a female mentor, and it's really hard to get women into trades, to be honest. Now, we're starting a program at the moment where we've got a Cert 2 in electrical studies going on, and there's five females going into that particular course, which is unheard of for us. It's fantastic, and they can all support each other, and we've got the support for them as they go through that. And the idea will be that then they'll go into an apprenticeship, local apprenticeship. And what I'm seeing is employers, their willingness to employ women because they know that they can do the job really well. In fact, they're fantastic in these career options. And so it's exciting that we're starting to see a bit of an increase in women going into these trades. And the second thing I'll touch on is mature age students. At our celebration night that we have with our trades every year, last year I'd say about half the students were mature age, whether that was men or women, but they've decided to do a career change, and that's been really well received.
That's easier said than done though, Mark, isn't it, in that you need to be in a financial position or have someone in your life that can support you in order to do that. We've had heaps of texts saying, I'd love to change, but I just can't take the pay cut.
Yeah, especially during the cost of living crisis.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's a really good point, and you're right. Where are they set up in their life, to be able to do this?
Yeah.
And it's also a part of the training model. You know, I think if there's an option for them to earn a little bit more somehow and do that study, then it's great. But we've got numerous examples, whether it's in automotive or electrical or plumbing or whatever it is, where people are going back and doing a different trade.
Mm. There's lots of people who are very jealous of Craig, who's been in the game for a long time and still managed to take the day off yesterday to go surfing. And this, it says, it's not the TAFE system. It starts with secondary school, not understanding apprenticeships. Teachers only know the university system.
Yeah, and I know a family friend had a daughter who was really keen on, I think it was woodwork or something, you know, hands-on like that, was the only girl in her class at high school and had a horrendous time, was bullied, was excluded, and it ended up turning her completely off. And she didn't even get a chance to get to TAFE to see if it was a career for her. And that made me so upset. So if you can't get it right in the classroom at that early age, that sets up a whole new chain of events, doesn't it? Doug has called from Caroline Springs. Welcome, Doug.
Yes. What I'd like to contribute is that when I started my apprenticeship, I was 15. And I think children now, they just don't get the exposure, for sure, that they need to alternatives to academics.
So the option of leaving school early to get a trade, you mean?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
They need, and also, as the previous fella said, that they don't have access to transport. I could even ride my motorbike at 17, at 9 months. They need to bring down the age to travel so they can get to their work.
That's a great point, and especially, I mean, I'm sure it's relevant in the city too, but especially in regional communities where you're likely to be travelling reasonable distances from where you live to where you might be working that day, unless you've got a mum or dad, big brother, sister that can drop you off on site every day. That becomes a real barrier, doesn't it, Doug?
When I did my trade, I was boilermaker number 88 in the apprenticeship group, and this was in the Latrobe Valley.
Yeah.
And the government would put on a lot of apprentices, and that's what we need to get back to too. We're large entities are compelled to put on a lot more young people.
It's funny, Doug, that you say that you're from the Latrobe Valley. That's where I grew up, and I reckon pretty much every boy I went to school with or every boy you were interested in at the time was either training to be a boilermaker or someone in their household was a boilermaker. Yeah. And I haven't heard anyone talk about being a boilermaker since you just mentioned it then. Mark, just finally, if you sort of had a wand, so to speak, in order to get those apprenticeship numbers up, what would be the biggest success component, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. Certainly, just picking up that caller's last point about access. I would reduce the age of driving to 17, perhaps, for some in regional areas, because that's a big issue for us.
I know that's a whole other conversation hour, I reckon.
I'll throw that one out there just quickly, but it's a situation where I know a student just recently spent 2.5 to 3 hours just to get to trade school for us, probably travelled 250 kilometres and did it for 5 days in a row.
Wow.
And that's bus, that's train, and then it's another train. And it was credit to him and his family, but that's the only way he could get to trade school. So I think there's something in that. Definitely the support mechanisms once you're in TAFE, and that is both for things like learning language literacy, which is a really big part for us, and also just to make sure that people are getting the support, the apprentices are getting the support as they go through. But then the schools part. I think for me, it's a really about that engagement with schools, the strong support for kids that want to go on and do trades, whether it's a male or a female. And I think that would help enormously.
Been really good to get your insights, Mark. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mark Fidge is the CEO of Southwest TAFE. This text that says you can get your driver's license at 16 in the Northern Territory, so most of Year 12 students drive to school and drive to work. I just wonder how Victorians would feel if we threw out there at the moment the idea that we should reduce the age that you can drive if it meant that you could take on an apprenticeship. So let's reduce the driving age to 17 so that we can boost numbers of apprenticeships. How do you think people would react to that?
And where I am, Rochelle, here on the border of New South Wales and Victoria, it's always been a huge problem and a big element of debate, because there are different rules each side of the border. So kids on one side can get their license and kids on the other side can't, and that creates all sorts of challenges. So yeah,
I remember when someone from New South Wales came to our school at Moi who had their license, he got friends real quick. Let's just say that.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Well, we're talking trade apprenticeship numbers and why they're dropping. Chris says, my daughter was a qualified trade teacher. She was not able to get full-time trade teaching because all the schools had cut out the trade subjects. That's coming through really strong, the role of schools and the role that they play in the education that either teachers or career advisors have, and those trends that come in of where are we pushing young people, you know, in what areas, what do we think is going to be the best and the most beneficial area for them to work in?
Interesting, because my daughter is starting high school next year. So we've been looking recently, you know, in the last couple of years at high school options. And I've been really impressed with the facilities, the interest in trades, the opportunities that every school we looked at talked about that. They had some of them had amazing facilities that my husband walked in and went, wow, I would have loved to have had a school like this. So I don't know whether it's different in rural areas compared to in the city, but, you know, that's interesting because that's not been the experience that I've had.
Before we speak to the Master Builders of Australia, let's have a chat to Peter, who's in Bendigo. Morning, Peter.
Good morning, Rochelle. Yes. Look, I'm a painter and decorator, and I'd love to be able to mentor somebody into this area that I'm working in still, and that's restoration and conservation work, painting and decorating. And it entails a lot of more artistic side of things. I have a display at the Lost Trades Fair, and I had a sign, big sign up there, apprentice wanted, and I didn't get a bite.
Seriously?
The whole weekend.
Why do you reckon, Peter? Why?
I don't know. It's a strange one. And look, I could organise for people to work in this area and learn it overseas, and there's bursaries and money that people will give you to go over and learn things like that I've done.
I wonder, I mean, it's incredible.
And I could organise that for them, you know.
I'm going to pop you on hold just in case there's someone listening out there going, I would have signed up. But I mean, that idea too of how trades are changing and, you know, as Peter said, the Lost Trades Fair, when you're talking about painting and decorating but seeing it as restoration and not necessarily throwing paint into a spray gun and just covering one big flat white wall.
It's a total craft, isn't it? Then?
Absolutely. Yep. And I've witnessed that. We have a very, very old house that sort of falls apart. And when you look at painting, you can't just paint an old house, you know, you have to restore it. Denita Warne is the CEO of Master Builders Australia. Denita, I mean, we've got lost trades, we've got schools that we're hearing should be doing more to be able to promote trades. Why do you think completion numbers of trade apprenticeships are just falling so greatly?
Good morning, everyone. I think the big issue we've got is really decades in the making. I grew up in the 80s where we were really focused on the attention of universities. And so we've had that decades of saying universities should be your goal. And we really haven't been promoting the benefits of trades. And in many instances, they've been declared second-class citizens from a career perspective. So we know that needs to be changed because there are huge opportunities available in the trades and all sorts of different jobs, as Peter has just alluded to, you know, that beautiful craftsmanship that we see, whether it's in restorations of old buildings, some of the beautiful stone walls that we see around and so forth. There are so many different opportunities that we want to promote, but we really haven't given it great enough attention at school level, at promoting parents in understanding the opportunities in the industry.
It's funny though, there's a text here that says, I've seen Peter's work at the art fair. It looks almost impossible. No wonder the kids are reluctant.
Ah, too clever.
Too clever.
How many apprentices short are we, Denita? So we know there's a cry from industry for more apprentices because, you know, there are positions unfilled. How short are we?
Well, the scary thing is that if you look at housing industry alone, we're required under the Housing Accord to build 1.2 million homes in 5 years, which would be a record. And at the moment, we're estimating that immediately we need an additional 90,000 tradespeople to meet that requirement. And we think it's going to be more over the period of 5 years. So we're talking about shortages in trades of every single trade in the building and construction industry across the country. And that doesn't include the fact that we're looking at electrification, so the increasing need of electricians as well adds to that level of opportunity. And we see it as an opportunity as opposed to a problem. It is a problem we've got, but it provides an opportunity for everyone in the sector as well as governments to really try and the situation.
But is it just seen as something that we can, well, let's just bring in people from overseas because that's going to be easier? Because there's a lot of resistance that's coming through on taking this up.
Well, we certainly, as part of the solutions, first and foremost, look at Australian apprenticeships and then we look at migration. The difficulty that we're hearing from the migration story is there are people in Australia in overseas wanting to come to the country, but the processing of visas is taking way too long. And then, of course, we're having issues around how we actually make eligible people in trades. And when we look at who our competitors are in Canada and the UK, they have a much more streamlined system of fast-tracking people in the industry. So this is a worldwide problem. It's not confined to Australia. And that's why we've really got to focus on our own and in promoting apprenticeships. And may I say, the industry hasn't been good at encouraging half the working population, and that is women. Only 2% of our trade workforce are females, and so we need to change that as well.
I'm rolling my eyes as I say this, but we need some TikTok influencers, don't we, to make trades trendy again. Where do you see the solution? So we know that we're not replacing the number of people leaving trades. We're not replacing them with new apprentices. But also those completion rates. We've talked about this many times already this hour, Denita, that, you know, nearly half of apprentices don't actually ever finish their training. So where do you think we can focus our energy to get the best results quickly, you know, within the next 5 years where you have this hurry need?
Let's focus first on completions because you're absolutely right. It's really a worry when we see completions of only 50%. That's really an issue where we need to make sure that apprentices, when they're undertaking apprenticeships, are looked after properly, that we have appropriate mentoring. We certainly have recommended to the government greater support of group training companies that are actually the employers that actually provide additional support over and above the host employer. So that is certainly a solution that we think has got considerable merit. We also are of the view that we need to ensure that apprentices, when they start their apprenticeship, actually are getting an idea of the outcomes from a long-term perspective. We see many that will do 1 or 2 years and then go and use that expertise in a high-paying job without completing their trade, which will help them in the long term. So there's some education there as well.
Denisha, so good to hear from you. Thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Denisha Warne is the CEO of Master Builders Australia. Well, we may have solved Peter's problem because Em has sent a text saying, can I have the details for Peter the painter and decorator, please? I have a Year 12 student who may be perfect, but they need to get in quick because, Sarah, this is something that you think might be beneficial for someone in your life.
Yeah, hi. I think he'll kill me for saying it, but he goes to the Lost Trades Fair every year and just loves sort of the old-fashioned way of doing things. And he's had a crack at uni, had a crack at TAFE, and he just needs to learn in a hands-on way. So I'd love to be able to put him in touch with Peter.
I love it when we can connect people, right? It takes me back to the perfect match day. Sarah, I'm popping you on hold. We've already got Peter still on hold, so we are going to connect the two of you, and hopefully it's something that will benefit your son.
Peter might regret calling us. He might have 150 apprentices.
Absolutely. Well, people love him. I mean, he must have done some work at the fountain in Bendigo. And if you know Bendigo well, you know that there is a beautiful fountain right in the middle of town. It says, every time I see the fountain in Bendigo, I think of Peter. His beautiful work can be seen all around Bendigo and beyond. Peter, we are here to solve your problems. You don't need the Lost Trades Fair. You need the conversation. It's fascinating, though, Bron, to hear that people just want it promoted in schools more. So maybe we're at that tipping point where uni is not going to be pushed as much and that a trade will be.
Well, and I think elevating trades and giving them the respect they deserve. And as you can see with Peter, incredible work. And it's probably time we celebrated and acknowledged and elevated, you know, the potential for trades to be this extraordinary career.
Bronwyn O'Shea, as always, thank you so much. I'll speak to you in a couple of weeks. If you want to pass on today's program, if you want to listen back, don't forget every show, every day of the Conversation Hour is a podcast. Go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.